Well, well, my good friend Ken, it has been too long, and this, for those not familiar, is OPA, and it's OPA number 79. We have taken an unfortunate hiatus, but we are back again. How are you doing, sir?
Well, it's good to be back, Evan. Back in front of the old mic with my co-host. And once again, we're tackling issues that, strike our fancy.
That no one else will tackle.
Yes. We're back to tackle these issues that no one will tackle. And frankly, people think maybe it doesn't need to be tackled.
Except for the people that tackle them from the websites.
Yes.
That we learn this weird information from.
I guess we're not. We're more piling on than tackling. I don't think we would. I don't think these would count as statistical tackles for our stats.
We wouldn't even get half a tackle for that, maybe.
No, this is more like the whistle's basically the play's basically already over. We're just jumping on top of it.
So, are we getting flagged for that? Or are we still close enough that we don't get called for it?
No, it's close enough. We're not getting called for it. So.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, maybe we're not going in full tilt, but our momentum is still carrying us into, yeah. So that's kind of what's going on, I think. But we promise to bring that type of energy to this, these issues that we're talking about.
Well, Ken, no use skirting around the issue. Now, I had honestly forgotten about this one article. In general, I have a loathing of headline writers now because they don't always describe what is going to happen very well.
Yeah, sure. A lot of times you'll see a headline that'll be just sensational, right? And you'll think, well, they probably oversold that.
Well, or they even have a habit of emphasizing maybe the wrong thing within the article itself.
Yes, burying the lead.
Drawing more attention to it than really probably needs to be. Like, there's probably a better message in there, but they decide to pick up one little fucking detail. You're like, ah, you assholes. Like, really, that was barely a part of the story.
And it's really not what the article's about, yes.
Yeah, it's not really what the article is about. Ah, you're killing me here.
I've been there, yes. There's some bad headline writers out there.
And but this one killed me because it's from Gizmodo.com. This deep-sea fisherman posts his discovery on Twitter and, oh my god, kill it with fire. Which I can see having that reaction. This is a Russian fisherman.
Yeah, and he has something of a knack for taking pictures, I must say.
Well, he has a knack for picking up some really, really weird creatures in the northern part of the seas and around Russia.
Yeah. It looks like he may be fishing near some sort of
Chernobyl.
Or oh yeah, I was thinking either that maybe of like a Pacific Rim esque rift in the floor of the ocean.
Yeah,
where strange creatures are swimming through from another dimension. Because these are some weird looking. I don't know. Some of them are fish.
Yeah, I mean, this one, honestly, like, the one that's in the main picture of the article looks like it, like a miniature shark kind of thing that still almost looks like it could be human or, like, actually, it kind of looks, it reminds me of the alien from Aliens.
That's exactly what it reminds me of, too. And I think part of this is what I'm saying. I think like a little bit of this is like him setting up the picture well, because the perspective on that one, I think, is helps to make the picture. And some of these other ones too, like this. This looks like some kind of screeching eel from The Princess Bride.
Yeah, and even if His picture taking ability is aiding in making these things look additionally creepy. They still look kind of creepy.
Oh no, there's a high baseline of creepiness to these creatures. Yeah, I didn't. I wasn't really hyping it too much to say that they came from some kind of Pacific Rim gateway.
No, I mean, that's a perfect description. It's just like, oh my. I mean, they always, or at least I feel like it's been mentioned a lot, that, you know, we've only explored a fairly narrow amount of the seafloor.
Yes.
And even lower depths, that because most ships can't go that low because of the water pressure surrounding it.
Yeah, although I have been hearing more about the kind of deep sea drones that they've been using lately. So I wonder if eventually we'll be able to even get all that area mapped. But
yeah, but you're not always gonna. I mean, I guess if they have a camera mounted to it, you can see these weird creatures. But that's kind of the other thing, that depending upon how deep this guy is fishing, even a camera is only going to do you a limited amount of good. Just because I believe that the depth perception kind of gets shorter as you go down further, because it is that kind of dark down there.
Oh, yeah. I think you don't really, like, some of the fish down in the deep dark, like, maybe don't even have working eyes because they don't need them. But,
yeah, which is just wild in and of itself.
But then I think there's some that are, like, you know, bioluminescent, so I don't know if they can somehow use that to see as well. But, yeah, the sun, it's so deep down that the sun doesn't shine, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, and, oh man, because this is the other way that you can go. If you don't get that much light, you can have, like, this giant, like, pterodactyl-looking head thing going on here, which is another picture. You have a giant eyeball, at least on one side. It looks like it's on both.
Oh, okay. See, this reminds me of something from Beetlejuice.
It kind of reminds me of Zorak.
Zorak?
Space goes coast to coast.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that with a semi praying mantis looking.
Yeah. Craziness that's going on.
It reminds me of one of the sandworms from Beetlejuice. I don't know if you remember that that scene where they were somehow, if they tried to leave their, like, you remember there's a ghost couple, yes. Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis. They were trying to get the humans to leave the house, but
right
when they, I think, tried to leave the house, yeah, that's how it was. When they tried to leave the house, like, they couldn't leave the house because there was, like, they went to some other planet where there was, like, these sandworms. I don't know if you remember that part.
No, were we the ones that talked about Indiana Jones the last time and how I had
them? We did talk. Well, we talked about that when we met with our significant others for a dinner. Yes.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Then I can say it all on air. Then there are just some movies that I'm just like, oh my god! Like, I remember watching that a lot. Like, Beetlejuice is definitely in that. Like, I probably didn't watch that as much as Raiders of the Lost Ark, but there were parts of Raiders of the Lost Ark that I completely forgot about. And one of them was when they try to make off with the Ark, and then a German submarine ends up catching up to them. That was something that I had completely erased from my mind. So yeah, like, in
right.
the times I've seen Beetlejuice, I don't remember the
because wasn't the there like worms. A boat captain who kind of helped them to try to, like, get away from the Germans who were, like, taking over the boat at that point? Or
yes,
yeah, that is a part that is you can be surprised to find it's actually in the movie, because it is kind of a, it's something that could be glossed over pretty easily, I think.
Yeah.
But he does need a reason to be with the Nazis when they open Ark at the end, I think.
Oh, yeah. It is somewhat important to... Because that's... I was just like, oh, he got the Ark? Like, for some reason, I thought the bazooka incident didn't end well for him. But it really did, because he ended up with the Ark.
Yeah, I think that allows for, you know... And I think that that's one of the reasons that people like the character of Indiana Jones so much is because he really has a nice arc as a character.
Oh, I'm going to let that one just sit there. I am just going to linger and bathe in that joke. Wowzers.
That's the exact reaction I could have hoped for. So yeah, I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased with myself.
Oh man. So yeah. After that, yeah. Don't remember the sandworms, but I can see this fish looking like a
yeah. It just has like it sandworm. Looks like it was something that Tim Burton might have slapped together.
Oh. Yeah, for sure.
I don't think that, you know, you would think that that's a real creature by looking at it. So this one, I don't know.
It looks like a Spider-Man. Not a Spider-Man? Spider-Man. But a spider, comma.
Yes, man. I would say it looks like the radioactive spider from Spider-Man. Because there's something weird about this. It's not a normal spider.
Well, yeah, it looks like it's full, like, it's almost a crab, because it looks very shell-like in its body structure, but it's definitely an arachnid, because it's got eight legs.
Yeah, it's a eight-legged freak as, what's his head? Gosh, I wish I remembered his name. Whoever was in that movie. Was Arquette?
Oh.
David Arquette? Yes.
Oh, there we go. Arachnid.
Oh, Eight-Legged Freaks, I think, was the name of the movie.
Oh, Eight-Legged Freaks. Oh, yeah.
There was also Arachnophobia, which Arachnophobia. I enjoyed. Yes, that was...
Jack Daniels.
Jeff Daniels.
John Goodman.
Yeah, that's right. John Goodman was the exterminator guy. Yeah. He played a little over-the-top exterminator guy in that movie. Forgot about that. Oh, or that could be from one of those films, yes.
Yeah, and actually, this is one of the few ones that didn't freak me out, because this fish kind of looks like a piranha, and I feel like I have, you've talked about the bioluminescent fish.
Okay.
I feel like I've seen one that has, like, a bioluminescent, like, bulb attached kind of to a fish like this.
An anglerfish, maybe?
Is that yeah, like an anglerfish or something in that area, like... Not that this one still doesn't look kind of a little extra creepy compared to the other ones, but...
Yeah, I heard about those anglerfish. Like, the male anglerfish are, like, super tiny. And all they do, like, I guess they really can't, like, hardly even eat on their own. Like, they just look for the female anglerfish and, like, attach onto it. And from there, they're able to, like, fertilize her eggs. But they kind of, like, burrow in and, like, become... like part of just like a, you know, a sperm producing organ on the female.
Oh,
yeah.
What kind of crazy existence is that?
And if they don't like find a female, they'll just like die off. It's really kind of,
how long do they live?
I don't know.
Oh,
but I mean, if they're like latched on, and there can be like multiple males on one female. So,
well, it's, if there's reincarnation and you know that that's happening, that kind of sucks. Although, I guess you don't live very long, so reincarnation is going to come right back around.
Oh, well, if they're attached to a female, they'll like, draw on her, you know, like, yes, blood supply and,
right,
like, live that way. And basically...
They're a leech.
Well, it's like, they their body, like...
But they do supply sperm, I suppose, so they do some... Some,
yeah,
work in this situation.
But it's almost like they're transplanted onto her, because they're like, her, you know, kind of grow into her body It's just weird.
Almost an alien situation. Since we've been talking movie heavy.
Yeah, I'd say it's a similar to, but there's no like chest burster that comes out.
There's no gestation period.
Right. It's just a kind of a latching on and staying there situation. Which, you know, that's a pretty grim life, I would say, like, to look forward to if you're a male angler fish.
Yeah, that still isn't, that is not an existence that I would be looking for.
This one I said, I think reminds me of like the full-grown, xenomorph alien from the movie Aliens, as opposed to the first one, which more was more of the chestburster, fresh out from, you know, jumping out of somebody's chest. This one is more of the full-grown version that has like the snapping jaws that kind of come out from the mouth,
from the snapping jaws.
Yeah, the standing jaws that come out. Yeah, this looks like that's what we're seeing here with this picture to me.
Yeah, and I mean we could really kind of keep on going through these, but it's just kind of crazy to look at them. Like it, to me, it was worth the time to just scroll through and see some of these wacky. Because, I mean, even if maybe some of them are just uncommon to us, like this almost looks like a, there's the one picture, well, not that it's that common really, but just because I watch Iron Chef and everything, it's called a gooey duct. And that's what some of these, that's what the one picture looks like.
That reminds me of like a coral almost, the way it's like a weird little animal thing, like. Popping out of like a hard kind of shell,
yeah,
it looks like.
Hard shell. Yeah. I mean, not that it isn't still. It's just weird looking at stuff like that.
Now that looks like some kid's, you know, art project. Like, that doesn't look like a real thing.
It reminded me for some reason of like an aardvark, but with the giant eyes.
That one looks like, let's just
but
see.
But it's not really an aardvark.
I'm just
going to
throw this together and out of paper mache, and let's just see if people actually, stupid Americans actually believe that this is a real fish. Yes. No, I guess I'm assuming it's a real fish, but that's just what it looks like to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's
ridiculous looking.
It's pretty wild. I mean, if nothing else, it does, because it kind of reminds me, without the head, of an armadillo, like kind of like armadillo, like because it's kind of egg shaped with a giant eye on each side.
Yeah, I could see that
in a tail.
The eye is literally as big as a saucer, and like half the size of its total head. I would say is an eye. If you could say that it has a head, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's a body head thing. Like I feel like there's a distinction with the scaling and everything, that there's kind of a head area, but it all kind of blends together into one massive thing.
Yeah, I think he's doing a good job with taking, you know, getting the right angle for these creatures to kind of bring out the most unsettling aspects of their nature. So, hats off to this, Russian fisherman.
Oh, man. Well, almost as far north as Russia is Finland. And, really, Finland, I do believe, was occupied by Russia at some point.
I was going to say, I think they were historical enemies at some point. So, yes, there probably is some kind of a connection there that we can use to segue. Smooth as silk.
Smooth as silk as I look for a map desperately to.
Still a well-oiled machine.
Confirm what I'm thinking.
Oh, no. I'm pretty sure they border each other. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Okay. Well, I couldn't remember if it was the, I suppose, easternmost of the countries there in that peninsula. But it's the westernmost. So it does border Russia the most, because Norway does have a minor border with.
And by westernmost, you mean easternmost.
This is the west.
This way is east. That way is west.
Oh yeah, easternmost. Yeah, I was going wrong direction there.
That's okay. It's if you ever get confused, west and east spells out we. If you're gonna think of it that way. If you're looking at up being north.
Oh right, yeah. I don't know why I was getting those backwards.
Well, that's why I'm here to help out, you know. And we just want to make sure our listeners have the most accurate information.
And I sound like an ass.
That's a bonus, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize how close St. Petersburg was to those countries.
Yeah, I was just watching on a documentary about Russian history, the Tsars. I don't know. A lot of Russia in the news lately, so I guess I was kind of curious. Yes.
Brushing up on your Russian history.
Brushing up on my Russian. And they talked about St. Petersburg. Peter the Great founded it. And I forget. I mean, they said there was like thousands of serfs that died each month during the making of this city. It was like it was like an unsuitable location. So they had to like really like, it was like kind of marshy, I guess. So they had to like kind of transform the area. Yeah.
Dang.
So, it was pretty rough stuff there. But
I was going to say, it seems, just because coastal cities are always, a very common occurrence. You're near water.
That must have been the draw there. Yeah.
Beneficial.
Yes. And apparently, Peter the Great was known for building a navy, I guess, for the first time for a Russian leader. So that would make sense, too, then, the connection there.
Let's go across the Baltic Sea here a little bit.
That's good stuff there.
Over to Helsinki in Finland again for the story here.
Yes.
I guess I had seen someone write about this, not about the fact that Finland is going to be giving 2,000 persons aged 25 to 58 a monthly stipend without having to report how they spend it.
Mm-hmm.
They are giving them approximately $583 U.S. dollars tax-free every month.
Yes.
Now,
I guess this is in addition to their normal like unemployment or whatever? Or
yes.
Yeah. And like you say, if they get, or I don't know if you said this, but if they get a job, it doesn't cut off. Like, they continue to receive this benefit.
Correct.
Which is different than traditional unemployment or things like Social Security disability, I guess, that we have in this country. Like, if people are kind of unable to work, a lot of times, the government will pay for people to, give them a certain amount of money to kind of live on.
Right. Yeah. So, it's different. It's pretty interesting. I mean, it's a large enough sample size to at least get some information out of. Because they did say that they wanted to go larger with this, but they didn't have a way to make it fiscally feasible at this time.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of excited to see somebody actually trying this idea, because it's been something that's been kicked around for a little while.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked kind of in past episodes about automation and how we're probably going to have more free time and whatnot due to automation. And a lot of people think that this is going to be more of a thing.
Yes. it is an interesting idea. Like,
yeah,
if you're still,
or to help kind of combat that kind of situation, I guess they think that this kind of system might help.
Now, I guess the idea is that this is going to be better than, you know, say, disability payments. Because I think that that does happen sometimes if people are basically unemployable, like they are basically not qualified or, you know, not going to be able to work, you know?
Right.
A lot of times, you know, kind of as, I guess, a last resort or some kind of backstop, people end up on, like, Social Security disability, which is that they aren't allowed to work anymore, or else they will lose their benefits. So that kind of prevents people from being able to even do, like, part-time or freelance stuff, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Which might be something that they could do, you know.
Yeah, that they're capable of, but it screws them in the long run.
Yes, so they would basically lose out on their income.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty interesting. And I mean, the article that I read previous to this one, that was kind of what they were arguing, is that, you know, it's... You know, it allows you a freedom to kind of follow your heart.
Nah, that's right.
As dumb as that sounds. But yeah, I mean, you kind of have your choice.
Like, become full-time podcasters.
Yeah, we would definitely have to put up a Kickstarter if that were the case.
Yeah. Or get on this Finland deal here. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we could go Stunt Granny Brewing full time. Just start making beer left and right.
Yeah.
Start selling it out of the basement.
That could be a thing, too. But, you know, you might feel a little bit more, I don't know, willing to try to do something like that if you had a certain base level of income that you... kind of knew about.
Yeah, and I mean, $583 a month is not exactly...
You're not going to be living on the high life.
Right. You know, I would imagine that if you need some type of living quarters, mm-hmm. You know, and... honestly, I doubt that there's a rental unit that's $500 at this point. Considering that my fine abode when we looked on Zillow was listed at $1,000. You know, and newer, nicer places are going for more than that. You know, I mean, it really doesn't even pay for a basic home.
Yeah.
You know, per month. You know, it would probably, I'm sure that there's a small single unit that maybe you can get close to $500. But, you know, I mean, it really isn't that much. But, I mean, if it helps someone kind of.
And I don't think we did the research to know what the, you know, the rent market is like in Oslo. But, you know, we can assume it's... on a similar basis with the dollar conversions here that must be going.
Yeah, considering that, I mean, it was 560 euros was what the payment is, and it's only $583 in US. So, I mean, I would imagine that at least dollar to dollar, things are somewhat equal.
Yeah. So it's probably a similar buying power, I would imagine. Basically, that's the point of exchange rates, isn't it?
Right.
So this would be, I'm sure, a big help for people if you know, they're looking for work.
Yeah, and I mean, if you do just get a part-time gig here and there, like you were talking about, you know, that $583, you know, maybe does just help just enough to get that rent payment in.
Yeah.
You know, if that's all you can do.
And, you know, it was, I ended up being on unemployment a few years back when I was out of a job. And I was trying to get into...
Is that how you get on unemployment?
Yes, it's that simple. I was trying to switch careers at the time. And, you know, it was a little bit tricky because, looking for a new job but didn't want to take necessarily a lower level because then I would be, you know, taking... You know, it would be a change. I would be resetting my unemployment and I don't know. It wasn't necessarily set up to be to give you a lot of flexibility, I guess is what I'm saying. So
yeah, it does not sound as easy as many make it sound like.
Yeah, and you had to be. You know, looking for a job in a certain area.
Right.
So it's a little strange, but you know, I feel like that we are a pretty rich country, so we probably could afford something like this, but I don't know that there's ever a hell's chance of ever happening. But you know what, Kevin? Who the hell knows anymore? Anything is possible.
Well, this is such a small sample. Like, 2,000 people is still small enough that, honestly, if a city decided to do something like this, that it could happen.
That's true.
You know, everyone tends to forget that there is a... local and state governments for some reason or another. So I would not be surprised if someplace, some large city decides to test this out at some point. I figure they'll let Europe do it first. And then...
Seattle, maybe?
And then fine-tune it.
Portland? I'm guessing.
That's, yeah, those are possibilities. Somewhere in California, anywhere in California, pretty much.
Yeah, I could see it happening out there. I think those areas have been, ahead of, like, say, the minimum wage and things like that. So it wouldn't be too surprising to see that pop up out that way first.
Correct. Yeah.
But it would be at least someone's trying it, and I'm glad that someone's trying it just to, if nothing else, say that, well, that didn't work, so.
It's kind of like one of those things. It's just like, you don't know until you know.
And I think there is something to be said for, like, not trying to, like, put a lot of strings on the money and, like, trying to think that you know, like, better
what
than
that person.
What they need. Yeah, I think people are usually pretty good about knowing what they need, actually. So, that's, I think, good to let them have the choice.
There are definitely people that would likely waste the money.
True.
There, just like with anything else, there's going to be some waste.
Right.
I think that it's impossible to get around with that. But, yeah, like you said, I think more of a majority of people would know what the hell to do.
Yeah. I think, in general, people would not be completely ridiculous with it. So, at least that's what I would have believed. But then again, we're going to find out now, I guess.
Yeah.
At least in Finland.
In Finland and a number of other places are thinking about testing it out, too. That the article mentions
from Finland to Portland.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't in the U.S. Scotland.
Another land. This is a three makes a trend here, Kevin.
Oh, in the Netherlands.
Oh my God. 4 for 4. It's crazy.
Yep, all kinds of lands.
Disneyland is next, obviously.
No.
Candyland, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, we'll be seeing what happens, I guess. This might be a topic that we follow up on again.
Oh yeah, this one is definitely ripe for follow-up. And one that to me is something that I guess it's in our land, quote unquote, the United States.
This land is our land.
This land is our land.
From California to the New York Island. Because that's how people say that.
Yes, it rolls right off the tongue, Ken. Duh.
This is our land, but a not our time we're talking about here, Kevin.
No. And you know, this was one of those things that I guess I was completely unfamiliar with.
You had not been aware of like mound building, or
Well, there are some mounds in Ohio that are actually relatively close to
yeah,
Columbus
I was
here.
gonna say that this area of Columbus is has a lot of Indian mounds, so I would have been surprised if you had not heard of such a thing before now, Kevin.
No, I had heard of that, but I was not familiar with 22 100 acres in Illinois across the river from St. Louis. That there are not only mounds, but there's like an entire city and all kinds of mounds around it. Like
Yeah.
it was crazy that it was a drive-in movie theater at some point in Illinois' history.
Wow.
Because they have a picture of it, which cracked me up. Because they put the screen obviously up on the mound.
Now the mound in question, I think, is Monk's Mound, I think
Monk's
they count
Mound,
it.
yes.
And from what I could tell, it's like a 3-story tall, or 3-level tall, Indian mound where someone could stand on top of and kind of deliver an impressive, speech from,
Yeah.
and be heard for quite a distance.
Well, it was one of those things that I guess I was not familiar with the time period of this society in the United States geography now.
So we're talking like year 1050 or so, I believe, is when the
Yes.
city was kind of in its heyday.
Yeah, its main heyday was 1050, but founded as early as 900 and out of population by 1400.
So this place was called Cahokia, I want to say. Was that
Correct.
yes. So at the time, it had a like in its kind of biggest form, had a population of around 30,000 people, which they said at the time was bigger than like London or Paris. So,
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty large city at that point in history. It's amazing how far we've come in the population department.
I guess that's one thing you probably don't think of is like Native Americans in what is now the United States. Having like large cities, I think it's kind of like more in the imagination of kind of nomads or small settlements maybe.
Yeah, just because Well, and it's kind of funny. I'm gonna guess that the little bit of Indian history that we learned in grade school.
Yes. May have been a glossing over of things and not really that in depth.
Yeah.
I could see that.
It always seemed, learning from those textbooks that Indian society is not really one much for cities in any form, really. Like, it seemed like there was a lot of mobile tribes that knew how to pick up stakes and move along.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of, like, myths that people have about, Native American cultures and how they are, somehow at one with nature and, like, don't have kind of the same, negative things that we have today. But, you know, I think this story, if anything, is an interesting examination about how they are just basically people are people because they were doing kind of the same stuff that,
that other people around that time period were doing.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's kind of funny to me when people are like, oh, why did all these people build temples like that? You know, step kind of pyramids and things of that nature. It's just like,
oh, yes.
Well, that's the easiest form to build, you jackass. Like, I mean, what doesn't make sense about that? Like,
actually, if you just start piling, you know, trying to build something without a plan, it's going to turn into a pyramid shape pile. Yeah, because that's right. Just how things are going to fall if you just start throwing things up there. So, yeah, that's kind of like the natural shape for things.
Yeah, and then you taper off the edges a little bit, and for some reason people think this is brought to you by aliens. Jesus.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but yeah, it's aliens.
So anyway, I would think that this article is something of my own ignorance to, and I think that, I guess just in general, like, it was always something that we examined European culture or even lightly some Asian culture. Like, you think of those places more historically, like pre-1776. Mm-hmm. Let's choose an arbitrary date for this.
Sure.
Or 1492, I should say. Really.
All right, yeah, okay, that's a good one.
Is actually probably the best date. Like, I guess that it was, now it's kind of fascinating to know that there was something. But even this, like we had already said, that it was abandoned by 1400. So, by the time anyone from Europe found their way out the St. Louis area.
Right. This place was already had been abandoned.
Yeah, it had been abandoned for probably 100 plus years.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, it's something that they wouldn't have found, more than likely, because that was the other thing that I guess was pretty interesting, is that a lot of these buildings that they're finding in this site are, you know, buried under layers and layers of dirt.
Right, and they find multiple layers of buildings on the same site, built on top of each other, basically.
Yeah, which really in any other major city is the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, there's usually more than one layer to most cities that have been around for a significant period of time.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting because they could see that the floor had been there and then kind of burnt, and then a new floor put on top of it. And, they could tell actually something about their culture and sort of the rituals that they were doing too, it looked like, because they had these pits that they were throwing things into and burning to kind of fit in with their beliefs of like the underworld and the overworld.
And Earth being in the middle.
And the Earth in the middle, yeah. It seems like a pretty common set of beliefs, it seems like. Look around the world.
Oh, yeah. Because I always think...
Heaven and hell and in the world, Earth in the middle.
Yeah, I think that beliefs tend to run pretty concurrently. Even if they're worded differently, let's say.
Yeah, I think people kind of are people and come up with the same kind of stories. But if you look at, it was interesting, this article, there's a lot of stuff about them digging up these artifacts and a little about licking deer bones, which I was surprised. That's the test to see if a piece of material is a bone or not, is to
is whether it's human or deer, because deer is sticky.
Yeah, to lick it with your tongue. That somehow seems not scientific, but you know, that's what they were doing.
We will not let the result of the test out, just to make you go read the article to find out the answer.
Yes, we should send some traffic to Ars Technica and this article, which was a pretty good read. So,
it's definitely a long read. I guess the one thing that I find fascinating about it too is that. I think that there was a little bit more written history in Europe at the time. It doesn't seem like, it just seems like there's a lot of speculation about the motivations and why a city was this large, just because there wasn't really any kind of document. Like, the buildings are there, so there's that documentation, but there isn't any, like, written documentation. And they didn't mention really any in the article either. Like, there was definitely, like, stuff that you could tell was from rituals, even graves and things of that nature that, hinted at spiritual ritual killings and things of that nature.
Oh, human sacrifice, yeah.
Human sacrifice. And I think that there was some animal sacrifice, too.
Yes.
Which also, seemed to be pretty common around that time period.
Yeah.
In multiple different cultures.
Yeah, it's just interesting that they're able to find out so much about what happened back that long ago, with there not being, like you said, any kind of even written record, let alone like all of the data that we're leaving out in the world today, living our lives, just by digging in the ground, they can kind of find out so much about the culture of these people, and even the history of the city. To be the
yeah,
they can say over time how things changed.
It was pretty crazy that they had it broken down into three different time periods too. for how long that culture was there, because it was like 500 years that the city was around.
Yeah, and they think that it might
that's a pretty damn long time.
They think it might have been founded due to a supernova that went off during that time, which would have produced a bright enough light to basically look like there's another moon in the sky all the time.
Yeah, they said that it would have been visible during the day, but would have looked like a full moon at night.
So that would have probably freaked people out around the world, I would imagine, during that time period.
Yeah, and they even had something called a wooden henge, which obviously, as the name implies, would be...
It's a henge made out of wood?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yep, it is a henge made out of wood.
We're all familiar with what a henge is. I don't need to get into that, of course.
Yeah, why?
It's a very common instrument that you're likely to find in anyone's house. some people are made out of wood, some stone, but yeah, this one was wood.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess there's just a lot of, I guess this is one of those articles too that makes me kind of want to learn more about everything that did go on before the Europeans got here. Like, I mean, I guess there could be stuff similar, because I guess now I'm thinking of Michelangelo and the you know, the Renaissance in Europe and things of that nature. I guess I wouldn't be surprised if something like that occurred somewhere here in the, you know, geography of the U.S. again. Well, that we just don't know about, or
I know that there is the
you know, isn't dug up yet.
The Serpent Mound, it's like a national memorial or something, is a little way south of here. I've always wanted to check that one out. So I guess that's like one of the biggest
mounds,
earthworks, you know, in this part of the country. So that would be something to check out. Apparently it looks like a giant snake. I think it might have been the snake eating like an egg, I think. So they think it might have been some kind of like ritual significance to it, which basically they think is how this city was formed in the light of that... supernova we were talking about.
Right.
There may have been some kind of religious revival in the area, which is interesting. You think about revivals in this country over time as like people coming through in their tents and like preaching up a storm and getting people all riled up. And it sounds like it was kind of a similar situation back then with people having new ways of thinking and it attracting other people to kind of come and like gather in that area to kind of form up the city and then work together to build these huge mounds. So it is
yeah. And they didn't dig just mounds. There were also pits to help offset like some of the flooding, I think, that they'd, you know, dig out specific pits to make sure that when the river flooded, the water would reach into them, which I thought is, you know, I'm like, damn, man, that's just kind of a brilliant plan. Like, you don't have any other options. Just dig a damn hole.
Yeah.
Or your ass gets waterlogged.
Yeah, that's a smart way to handle that. Because I think they would also dig to get the clay and then... have like you know, as a, also get these so you can also kind of kill two birds with one stone, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, it does serve a double purpose.
It's a win-win. You get to build your cool stuff and you don't have to worry about getting flooded.
That was their version of multitasking.
Yeah. Before smartphones, that's how people multitask. They dug out flood controls and building materials.
Yes. All at the same time.
The other thing I thought was interesting is that the city of Cahokia?
Yeah.
Was, they said it was not like a grass area. Like it would have been... just basically like black mud everywhere, which kind of reminds me of like a paved city of today in a way.
Oh.
With the sidewalks and everything, there's not grass growing. So another thing that's kind of a misconception, I guess, about traditional Native American ways of life, at least at all times. You know?
Yeah, well, and it was kind of funny that they specifically mentioned that in the article, that that all of the artist's depictions are wrong because they depict some type of grassy knoll on the mounds. They're like, nah, that probably wasn't what was going on.
Yeah, a lot of them would even include the CIA agents who were... actually firing the shot to take out Kennedy on that grassy knoll, but That was just the most inaccurate part of the whole thing, I think.
Oh, man.
Oh, don't you think that's a good one to to wind things up on, Kevin?
I do. And I think there's something else that we could wind up on that I have done a poor job of doing on some of the other shows. Talking about the mighty fine beverages that I ingest during the show. This one was a present from one Jeremy Mays. He bought me a 2-pack of El Segundo Brewing's Broken Skull IPA, which was made in conjunction with one Stone Cold Steve Austin of wrestling fame, so certainly ties in with the website.
No stranger to beer, is he?
No, and he is not a stranger to beer. Yeah, it's, as, already mentioned, it's an IPA. What do you think? Because I've already felt out Jeremy because, that, dummy, posted it on Instagram before I got my bottles. So I definitely knew what I was getting for Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, it was a, better than I was expecting, actually, for, you know, I don't know why I wasn't going, I should have been more trustworthy of Stone Cold's taste in beer, I guess.
Well, I follow someone, the Craft Beer Babe, on the Instagram, and she follows me likewise, but she just went out to El Segundo right after Jeremy sent me the 2-pack, and I was like, oh, I just got some of the Broken Skull IPA. And she said, oh, we took a growler of it home. So, and I'm like, oh, well, if she likes it that much, then it's going to be pretty awesome, and I'm good with it. Like, I like it.
I want to say it's like a lighter IPA, maybe, like the least color-wise.
It is a little bit lighter than some IPAs. In the hue department.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a refreshing flavor to it, for me at least.
It's a little, to me, there's a little pine in the front, a little floral in the back. Not too heavy on the malt, which I think helps with the coloring there, so that it's not interfering with the hops so much.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'm a little hurt that you weren't, you know, throwing cans of it, you know.
Well, next time around, Ken, next time around.
All right, that sounds like a plan.
Okie doke. Well, I am at DeFrango11. He is at Gozer33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Glad to have Opa back. Have a good night.
We'll see you.